The Guardian.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. If you want to build a website, you've got many options. But if you want to build it beautiful, there's only one. Squarespace gives you the power of world-class design so you can do more than create a website. You can set yourself apart. See why some of the world's most influential people, brands and businesses choose Squarespace. To start your free trial, head to squarespace.com/guardian.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Today, Premier League match day 5, United's victory over Liverpool. General excitement as decision to field Marshall proves major success and deepens Brendan's private hell. How long can he soldier on? Leicester, we like those foxes and loxes. Everton, who trounced Chelsea. The last time Mourinho saw something this exposed and with so little support up front, his daughter was wearing it. There's Champions League previews, Man City against Juventus and so much more. Post Balotelli's Milan derby and many other things too in this Football Weekly. Hey everybody, no Blarney today, but plenty of Barney. It's Barney Roney.
Hi James.
Season debut for you, Mr. Roney.
Yeah, I'm nervous, but I reckon I can get through it.
All right. Ian McCourt's in.
Hey Jimbo.
Great to see you. Paolo Bandini.
Hello.
Lovely to see you. So much to discuss, of course, this week. And John Ashdown as well.
Hi there.
In your green watch. Always on time.
Newly fixed. It's been the battery. I've been wearing the green watch for weeks without a battery in it, just because I like the watch so much.
Right.
But it gets quite confusing at times.
Right.
Well, the same time, actually.
Yeah, well, but now it's famously, again. It'll have been more accurate while it was broken than it's actually running.
I just realised today that I've had my watch set an hour ahead and I haven't moved it back.
Wow.
As well.
And did that have any effect on your punctuality? Or not
at all.
Right. Isn't that interesting? Hey, a great weekend of sport. The sport of football and some great goals in that football. Hey, Man United, Liverpool, again, that was largely rescued by some absolutely terrific goals from one of the dullest first halves. I literally fell asleep in the first half. But who was it for you, Martial or Benteke? Who had the best goal in there?
It was interesting, actually. I was there, and I actually have fallen asleep in a football. I fell asleep during England-Costa Rica at the World Cup.
No.
Not for long. I just, you know, and you feel yourself just drifting off, and I felt my head touch my laptop as I fell asleep.
Bet listeners know that feeling, don't they? Anyway, go on. Yeah.
Well, I hope I managed to convey that in my report.
Yeah.
But I was there, and it's a funny difference between... I thought it was one of the differences between watching the game on telly and being there. The Benteke goal I kind of missed from where I sat. I actually at first thought it was a header. But looking back, it was an absolutely sensational kick. But the Martial goal, it was fantastic. In the stadium, you really got what a fantastic goal that was. The way he moved out there, the way he demanded the ball, the way he got it, it was so different to everything else in the game. Everything stopped. The more I watched it on telly, the less I kind of thought it looked spectacular. But the moment in the stadium was absolutely sensational because it was such a bold move. The first thing he did when he ran on the pitch was to go towards Fellaini and just wave him backwards disdainfully. It was a brilliant... It's like, I've got this, it's fine. Which I thought was fantastic for his first moment on the pitch.
A real I-was-there moment for you.
It was good. And I think there's something about the way he drifts into those areas, like he did against Arsenal, which naturally is going to suit some quite weak defensive play on the flanks in English defense. Right. I mean, I don't know whether it's a deliberate thing, but he seems to loiter there quite naturally. And he did the same thing against Arsenal, and I was really impressed. I thought it's fantastic.
Well, it would be ridiculous to try and define him on the basis of his debut game. But is he the new Cantona? Or is he the new Federico Makeda?
No, I think he's going to be good. I think he's a good one. I mean, I think everybody thought he was a pretty decent player before he went to United, but the way he took to it was really encouraging. And the team looked transformed with a pacey, menacing kid up front. I think he's going to be good.
Although, as you pointed out, technically his goal counted as United losing possession, so that's something for Van Gaal.
Well, Van Gaal will work on it, yeah. It was a bad transition of play. But the other thing is, people have been saying, we shouldn't hype him up, you know, we should keep him a doubt. Yeah. I actually totally disagree. I was thinking, well, the Premier League... is a soap opera. What the one thing it's brilliant at is making stars, like the old Hollywood system. You know, people come, here's a kid, like the kid, the Man City kid who scored in the last minute. I think the Premier League is brilliant at hyping people up. It's what it does. We don't produce footballers. We produce these plastic stars. And when was the last time, you know, look back to Michael Owen as a kid in the Premier League. I mean, the best part of his career probably was the early hype. I mean, that's what you look back and think, what a fantastic era that was. He was this huge star, and it was really good fun. And that's the Premier League for you. So I think we should hype him up.
All right,
enjoy him while he's here. Right.
I think we might disagree about the best part of Michael Owen's career. It's helicopter tours over Dubai, surely.
That's a special. You leave Michael alone today because he's had a very rough weekend. Somebody was just about to interject.
Well, I was thinking about the other day, because you've had Van Gaal saying, "Oh, you know, he's young, and I'm really, you know, this is more for the next manager than it is for me," and giving his little nudge in Ryan Giggs' direction. I've sort of thought right away, it's sort of nonsense, because you look at who they've had up front, and the exact reason they've had to draft in Martial is because they've got a player in Rooney who was brilliant at this age, and then now actually he's got a bit older, isn't as brilliant anymore. And sometimes you do just need that naivety and, frankly, the sort of explosiveness and pace that you tend to not lose, but gradually tails off from your mid-20s onwards. I mean, you're not at your physical peak when you're 30. You're at your physical peak somewhere in your early to mid-20s.
Wise words, Paolo. The Benteke goal was crazy, though, wasn't it? I mean, the way he just hung in the air in exactly the way that bodies shouldn't, to borrow Douglas Adams' expression.
Yeah, I mean, it was a spectacular goal, and it's one of those sort of footnotes, isn't it, when you have a fantastic goal like that. I don't know how it feels afterwards to sit there and think that's one of the better goals I've probably scored in my career against one of the bigger teams you face, and it doesn't mean a hat lot, but he has scored three in as many games against United, so he obviously enjoys playing him.
But it was a disastrous first half for both sides, really. We'll come on to Liverpool in a second. Van Gaal, his side, beyond the goals, they did look much better in the second half.
I can't agree it was a disastrous half for either, really. I mean, I think it was a bit overplayed. It was a bit boring. I mean,
it was awful.
I was writing a report on it. It was all about this is the most boring game I've ever seen. And then there were four astonishing goals in the second half.
But the first half genuinely was, I mean, the total lack of ambition from both sides was
scary. Liverpool would say they're the away team and you've got to spend 20 minutes trying not to lose at the beginning. It was very tedious, but I'm sure Van Gaal could produce a raft of stats to suggest that it was all part of the process.
Well, there was that great quote where he said, "We played better."
That was hilarious, wasn't it? I'd say the first goal I thought was brilliant. I thought that was the awareness of those two players was fantastic. It was a real Man United goal. It was and a kind of an Ajax goal. It was two players on each other's wavelength, brilliantly executed. And the second one as well, you know, goal from wide areas. They were United kind of goals. Mm.
And that's the question, isn't it? We can sit here and grumble about the fact that maybe we sat through 45 minutes of football we didn't enjoy. But as a fan, in the end, if your team scores brilliant goals and beats the team you most want to beat, pretty happy, aren't you?
Yeah, three goals from the United side that have been really struggling to find the back of the net in the Premier League. What about Liverpool then? They lost and they looked lost.
Creatively, they looked lost. Mm. That midfield, without Coutinho in there, there's nobody to create chances.
Do you think we should feel sorry for Brendan?
I don't know. Make a case, Mike.
Well, I feel a bit sorry for him. He's had to make a new team, four new teams every time. Every time he starts getting good, basically his best player will leave. He may not have made the best fist of making a new
team.
Who
left in the summer that was his best player then?
Sterling. And he hasn't got Sturridge and Henderson. What it is, if you look back at that title-chasing team, the best thing about that was the front six. Three attackers and three midfielders. All of those players were unavailable at the start of the season. Now, that was his best team. Fair enough, he was very lucky to inherit a lot of them, and Gerrard had to go. He was part of the problem in the end. But I don't know, if management is all about throwing money at something and trying to hope some of these players fit in, constantly spending to cover gaps, wheeler-dealering, that's a bit of a shame. If he's not good at that, I wouldn't hold that against him as much as...
No, okay, but isn't... And there is the question over how much he's responsible for where the money is thrown for Liverpool, but isn't part of management and a large part of it making the best out of what you have? And in that sense, he doesn't seem to be doing a good job. I would argue as well that Mario Balotelli's performance in what, 30, 20 minutes for Milan on Sunday highlighted just how bad a job Brendan did with him.
Yeah, I have slightly mixed feelings on that, only because, I mean, look, I'm at a point with Balotelli where I can simultaneously hold the view that I think he's an unbelievably talented player, and he definitely showed that, but also that he's not an easy person to manage and to get that from every week. So I don't think that I would completely blame Roger for that. But certainly it did feel at a certain point like he just decided that this is too much work and I'm not going to try, rather than I'm going to keep chiseling at this because I think there's something worth fighting for there. And I think that's, you know, that's fine as it goes. You don't have to believe in every player, but it's just a bit of a strange position to get to so quickly when you've ultimately invested, you know, you couldn't get the player you ideally wanted, but you've invested the chunk of that Suarez money in him last summer. Why not give it a better go than that?
Well, for Rodgers, I mean, he came in and was appointed as a coach that wasn't a checkbook manager. There was somebody who could improve players and develop what was already there. And one thing he'd say at the moment is who in that Liverpool squad is currently improving, you know, who's on an upward trajectory, and there's not many. And the other thing is that he has got a brand new front three who started on Saturday. And you'd sort of wonder, what was the plan when he brought those, or if he did, or when whoever brought these players, and what's the plan? Because surely it can't be to have played Ings out wide on the left. Because, you know, we saw in the summer in the under-21s how much Ings struggled with that, with a wide role. I mean, he was really good whenever he played in the middle, most often behind Kane, but sometimes in front of Kane. And he just looks a bit lost when he's out on the left, doesn't really know what he's doing there. So,
do you really think he's not improved any players?
Well, that's the question. I mean, who's currently improved?
I don't know.
He's definitely improved.
Henderson's improved. Coutinho's improved. Mm. Some of the kids coming in, I mean, Joe Gomez has had a great start. I mean, that must be to do with the manager.
Right.
Jordan Ibe looks like a very good player. Raheem Sterling massively improved. Luis Suarez improved.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, I think he has improved players. I just don't think he's particularly good at hurling a team together. You know, if he was allowed to build one, maybe he would see a different manager.
This is sounding dangerously balanced.
I mean, it's a bit pie in the sky, isn't it? Because which managers do get to do that anymore other than the ones with the very, very biggest budgets? I mean, every club that isn't, you know, already in the Champions League and competing for everything is at this constant risk. And so Your windows are very small, and
how real is that risk? Do you think the whole Klopp agenda? How concrete do you think is Liverpool's consideration of an alternative at this point? How much rides on, for example, Thursday's trip to Bordeaux to their Nouvelle Stade, or as I'm told, it's called the Stade Nouveau.
You'd like to think
their new ground, by the way.
You'd like to think that no team would get this early in a season be getting the jitters, especially when they've not had, you know, such an awful start to the season overall. I mean, it's not been perfect, but they've had some decent performances as well. I thought they were very good for 45 minutes away to Arsenal. So I'd assume he's got a bit of time yet.
Right.
It won't be so closer to Christmas that they make that, given that the January transfer window opens and then they can make something happen.
All right. Well, Bordeaux are coming off a 2-2 draw away at PSG. It should be quite a tough opposition. They managed that draw, even with having a man sent off, although they did get two spectacular goaling errors from PSG's Kevin Trapp to help them to. That was the first time PSG dropped points this season, though. So Bordeaux, Willy Sagnol. Mm. What about Man United's trip to PSV? Quickly, can we just do that before part one comes to an end? I think, is that on Wednesday, that game, Ian McCourt, with the fixture list?
Yes.
We can confirm that's on Wednesday. Hey, PSV, who lost
it's on Tuesday.
On Tuesday, as we say, yeah. They lost their captain and their top scorer over the summer, poor old PSV. But they don't seem to be struggling. Wow, they had a big 6-0 win this weekend. You know, on the basis of what Man United have done this thus far, how do you feel this one's going to go?
I think United will do well in the Champions League this year.
Oh, yeah?
They've got the right manager and they play at the right kind of turgid pace to kind of do quite well. I don't think that anyone will take them by surprise.
Right. And Louis van Gaal knows all about Dutch football, of course.
He must know a bit.
He must know a bit. Eh? Philippe Cocu, that's in charge. Who's in charge of PSV or PSV,
as locals call him. And goes back to PSV for the first time.
Absolutely. Where he's going to be eaten alive, as former coach Aad de Moss says. There you go. Good to get a little bit of local info on that. Is Rooney going to play? Is he still out injured? How long is he going to be gone for?
I think he's still out, yeah.
For a month or so, is that right?
Troubled.
Is it hammies?
It's hammy, yeah.
It's hammy. All right, the other game in that group, because I know you're interested, Wolfsburg CSKA. That's it for once, says Ben. Next up, we're on to Everton-Chelsea.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. If you want to build a website, you've got many options. But if you want to build it beautiful, there's only one. Squarespace gives you the power of world-class design so you can do more than create a website. You can set yourself apart. See why some of the world's most influential people, brands and businesses choose Squarespace. To start your free trial, head to squarespace.com/guardian.
Wednesday sees Premier League champions Chelsea taking on Israeli champions Maccabi Tel Aviv. Chelsea, where Mourinho has finally ended that nightmare run of defeats to managers beginning with a P by losing to one beginning with M. So that's that's good news. A lot of people wondering if it's kind of Rosenberg moment ahoy for Jose. This after the Everton game, which saw the Blues travel up to, well, the Blues, and they get stuffed 3-1. Conceding two in the first, 22 minutes or so? Coming back a little, but ending up 3-1 losers. Well done, Everton, eh? What about Naismith, John?
Yeah, he's one of the... It's his 29th birthday today.
Today?
Naismith, yeah.
Happy birthday.
But he's one of those players who seems to have been in his mid-30s for the last decade. there were three really quite good goals, actually. And, you know, 3-1 wasn't an unfair reflection on the way things went. Yeah, Everton were really good and Chelsea were dreadful.
Only one substitute in Premier League history has scored earlier in a game than Naismith.
Who was that?
It was Chris Smalling against Burnley in February the 15th. 6 minutes he took. I don't know how long. How long did Naismith take? Seven or something? Wow. Anyway, more than that. Chris Slowly says, is Naismith the most underrated player in the Premier League?
Possibly. I mean, I thought the interesting thing about what Naismith did and the way Everton played was... He's the sort of player who, if you see all the goals, came pretty much through the centre of the team, which...
Was that because of Ross Barkley?
Well, in part. Hmm. But, I mean, my theory about Chelsea is you could kind of see what's happening to them coming. I mean, even on the first... I remember it being at Stamford Bridge for the first game of last season against Leicester. There were a couple of occasions there where basically Leicester ran straight through the middle and should have scored the first goal. What happened to them at Everton was similar to what happened to them at Spurs on New Year's Day. That team, if you look back at the great Chelsea team that Mourinho, the best Chelsea team he came up with, it was incredibly strong through the middle. Drogba.
So had a spine,
didn't
it?
A midfield with Essien, Lampard, Makaleli, then Ballack. They were really tough. And the Mourinho way of playing is to basically kill the other team and then win on the details. I mean, you're more organised, you're tougher, you're stronger, then you win because you've got better quality in attack. And once that first part doesn't happen, the team falls to bits. I mean, other teams can get away with not being strong there. Arsenal have been getting away with it for quite a while. Well, not winning anything, but winning games because they got other things. Chelsea, Cesc Fabregas is not a Chelsea central midfielder. I mean, and Matic looks... I mean, he's sort of gone to bits playing alongside him.
Cesc Fabregas hasn't played a decent game for about 10 months now, since before Christmas. And it's odd that Mourinho continues to play him ahead of Willian, who's playing much better in the centre midfield for them.
Our chums at Football 365 publishing a whole list of Premier League stats this morning. It's quite interesting, some of the categories here and who's top in them. For example, dribbled past the most times this season. Number one in the list, Cesc Fabregas, 11. A second place is Branislav Ivanovic, which is a little bit of a worry, but not perhaps a surprise. Other categories are not necessarily relevant to this game, but most shots without a goal. Who do you think that might be, Paolo?
Well, now we're talking about Chelsea. I'm wondering if you're going to say Costa.
No, it's Alexis Sanchez. Oh, okay. Harry Kane's up there as well. He and Memphis Depay on 17 without actually scoring. Alexis Sanchez on 28.
Sanchez keeps hitting the post, doesn't he?
Yeah. Most unsuccessful dribbles, Costa's in second place on that with 15, and he's up in the top four of most losses of possession from poor touch.
I did geek out a little bit on this game on Costa, which I was watching it and I was thinking he seems so much less decisive than what we're used to. And I think when you think about them conceding three goals, all right, Chelsea defence bad at the moment. However, they did concede three goals last year at Everton. They still spanked them,
right,
because they were playing so well up front. And I think he just... I was curious because he seems like he's taking a lot of touches. He's not really trying to take people on the way he was. And I just looked just specifically at that Everton game from last year. And he actually had a very similar number of touches in both games. He had 45 in the one last year and he had 38 this time. In that Everton game last year, he had four shots for his 45 touches, whereas this time he only had one. And I think that does tell you something. It tells you that he's not finding the positions, but he's also not just backing himself, I think, in a way that he was at a certain point last year.
I think it also tells you how good John Stones played. Right. Stones had him in his pocket for the entire game. Yeah. Well, that was one of the shame of this Chelsea being rubbish at the moment is that it overshadowed just how good everything were throughout the entire team. Barkley was superb, Barry was superb, Coleman on the wing, but Stones was just a class above everybody else. He was doing Cruyff turns in the middle of the box. His own box is just sensational. And the way he kind of pushes forward and he can even beat players in his own half as well. He was brilliant. Really, really great. Yeah, and you could see why Mourinho wanted to pay so much money for
him. Yeah, absolutely. I think you've got to give other teams credit. I mean, I think other teams have slightly worked Chelsea out a bit. Imagine if you're playing against Fabregas in midfield. You know he's got no alternative but to shuttle the ball on. He's not going to go past you. I think teams have worked it out, pressurised them, and they haven't really got an answer.
They've worked it out. Mourinho doesn't seem to come up with any solutions. Is the impression that Chelsea are getting worse, not better?
Well, he's complained already about sort of the lack of new signings, hasn't he, and whatnot over the summer. But you certainly get the sense that they've stagnated.
Mm. All right. Sean Opie asks, will Chelsea turn to Big Sam to avoid relegation? Because, look, they're down there. Where are they now? They're only a couple of points. They're one place outside the bottom three. They're 11 points behind Man City. This is the first time that Chelsea have conceded two or more goals in five straight league games since 1991. We're back to those dark days.
It's funny, though, isn't it? Because even though it's been all frills and spills and up and down, you still know who's going to finish in the top four, don't you?
No. Well, I mean, this will still be in the top four, but no team that's had only 5 points only 4 points after five games has ever finished higher than third. So they would be breaking new ground if they got into the top two as last year.
Mm. Well, yeah, but who's going to stop them? You know, the Premier League does break new ground, doesn't it? Especially with stratification of teams.
Well,
yeah, I suppose you can argue that the teams that could sustain a challenge for the top four
Spurs,
over the season.
Liverpool?
Spurs, Liverpool, Everton, perhaps.
Maybe Everton, yeah.
Yeah, they're only like, sort of 4 points ahead. So,
all right.
Just everyone writing off Leicester at this time.
Well, we'll talk about Leicester later on. Mourinho walking out of his pre-game press conference and then having angry words with Martinez. An atmosphere of tension there. A lot of people are pointing to the similarities between this Chelsea running out of steam moment and the one that time when he walked out after the Rosenberg draw. It was a draw at home to Rosenberg, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a really dismal, depressing draw.
Do you envisage a similar kind of game when Maccabi Tel Aviv arrive this Wednesday?
I mean, who knows? It could well be dismal, yeah.
Slavisa Djokanovic, a former Chelsea player now in charge, former Watford manager now in charge of Maccabi Tel Aviv. Jordi Cruyff, as we were marvelling the other day, very much involved in their backroom setup, I believe, unless that was somebody trolled on the internet or something. I don't know.
And he's Roberto Martinez's best mate.
Who, Jordi?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. They got through to the Champions League group stages by knocking Basel out of the playoffs, much to everyone's surprise. They won a 2-2. Well, they didn't win, but they earned a 2-2 draw at the St. Jakob's Park.
Basel won at Stamford Bridge last year, didn't they?
They did. So, by, you know,
they will definitely win.
Absolutely. And their key man, Aaron Zahavi, who's an extraordinary run. He's got three goals in three, but I think I couldn't find the stat. But trust me when I tell you that he's a midfielder and he's scored something like 60 goals in 70 appearances. It's almost like it's easier to score goals in Israel or something like that. But anyway, we've seen Chelsea struggle in these kind of games. We've seen Chelsea struggling this season in the Premier League. John, what's going to happen on Wednesday?
Well, as Barney says, who knows? But I think it's probably quite a good game for them. In that, you know, it gives them a bit of a chance to kickstart the season. They need to win. I mean, they desperately, desperately need to win. Mm. And I think they probably will.
All right. Well, the other teams in that group are Kiev and Porto. Porto are flying at the top of Portuguese Liga NOS. Kiev, by the way, are top of their Ukrainian league and unbeaten this season. Doing really well. Also in the Champions League this week are Man City. And that's scary for anyone who's going to be facing them. They went to Crystal Palace, as you know, on Saturday in a big first against second battle in the Premier League. And it was a late goal, but it was a goal. And that means they are five straight wins, first time since 1912. Haven't conceded a single goal. Wow.
Yeah, Mangala and company have been brilliant so far, as well as the two fullbacks.
Mm.
They look very strong, don't they? I mean, there's a clear message here that if you do spend vast amounts of money on the right players, you can look pretty good.
Right.
I mean, we were talking earlier before the pod. I agree. I think this might be the year when City do start to crunch into gear in the Champions League. I think they'll win this group, and they'll look pretty good.
I mean, in terms of the Champions League, I mean, I don't know if you want to talk about the Palace game more first, but I mean, in terms of the Champions League, I think it's just a huge part of this is going to be timing, and I say this pretty much every year I think I say this about the Champions League, and I said it last year about Juventus. Juventus were a very good team, but they got to the final of the Champions League last year because they hit form exactly the right point in the second half of the season. They got Real Madrid at a time when Modric was out, when Bale was just back from an injury, Benzema missed the first leg. Things happened for them at the right time to be able to win the games they needed to win. And I think this time it's exactly, it's the beginning of the tournament, so, you know, from their point of view, if they can just survive the group stages, then things may change.
But they were really sluggish in the group stages last year.
Yeah, and this is a tough group. And to be honest with you, this is the worst possible game for them at the worst possible time.
Although they're facing City at a time where it looks like David Silva will be out, that Sterling will be out, and Aguero will be out.
I suppose that's true. But Juventus are not ready. Right. They're not ready for a game of this stature, and that's what we saw again at the weekend.
You mentioned that it's a tough group. Evil Laundria mentioned this is something we were looking at the numbers for actually on Sunday, that this supposed group of death consists of Manchester City, who've taken 15 points from 5 so far this season, and none of the other teams have managed to win. Sevilla, I think, have 2 points from 4. Juve picked up 1 point, and that only just from 3. And who's the other team in there?
Gladbach
have had five straight defeats.
Four straight defeats. They've conceded more goals already this season than they did in the entirety of the second half of last season.
11 goals so far.
But this is sort of the point I'm making, though, is that I think that by the end of this group...
I was agreeing with you.
But by the end of this group, Juventus will be better. Juventus will be better by the time this group stage ends. So to play them at the beginning of it before they've had a chance to... Because they're a forming team at the moment with all these new players. Before they've had a chance to do that, it's exactly the right time to play them. And I think that City, having been given what looked like a really tough group on paper, to be able to play what was supposed to be the toughest team in that tough group at the beginning, beat them at home, which I think they will do, I think that's a real momentum builder for them for the whole tournament after that. It's a point where you start to say, after having struggled in the past, we've cleared this mental hurdle and we can build on that.
All right. What are Juve's prospects of tickling them on Tuesday?
I would say not good from the performances so far in Serie A. I think they've been very poor.
Two defeats and then a 1-1 draw on Saturday with Chievo, who happened to be top of the table when they came in. And that was slightly fortunate. I mean, there was a penalty late on, which I think was fair enough. But there was a disallowed goal for Chievo that mystified a lot of people.
Yeah, Bonucci and Cesar were both pulling each other. And Bonucci basically was the one who fell over. And so he got a decision. But it was... some people have suggested it's a make-up call because the free kick from which the goal was scored should never have been given in the first place. But looking at that decision on its own merits, I think you couldn't reasonably give that foul if you'd seen what Bonucci was doing, because they were both as bad as each other.
It was a Juve side that was risking what they would describe as key players ahead of the trip to Manchester City. Pogba was brought on in the second half. Mm-hmm. He's really looked lost this early season without Vidal, without Pirlo around.
And they managed to lose Claudio Marchisio for another month during that game as well, who was the player who might have been able to help him look a little bit less lost. Yeah, I mean, you've taken away so many points of reference from that team. You've taken away Carlos Tevez up front as your main point of reference. You've taken away Pirlo, who's the guy who can spread the ball around. You've taken over Vidal in that trequartista position, and now you're trying to work out, well, Pogba was there for two games. Now we've pulled him back into midfield again. You've got Hernandez there, who's only just arrived. There's nothing certain anymore. And look, the quality's there. The players are good enough. If they got it all together, they would be good enough to give City a very good game. But I just think that they are not ready yet.
Is this a clash of two of the finest back fives anywhere in Europe?
Buffon made a fantastic save, actually. Yeah. That's the other thing with Chievo. He made a fantastic save at the weekend to keep him in at 1-0. So, yeah, I mean, Juventus is back four is very strong. I will say, though, Sterling gave Lichtsteiner a bit of a runaround during the England-Switzerland game, and I think that's something, you know, both Sterling and Evra, not young men anymore. I don't know if they'll play Alexandro Juventus. Yeah. It's possible.
He looked really good, actually.
Yeah, good debut. The possibility to get at them with pace down the flanks is probably a little bit more than it was in past years.
I'm really looking forward to seeing Pogba play as well. Obviously back in Manchester, it's a team we wanted to sign him, but also up against a really powerful midfield. I mean, I think Touré's been in good form, and I'm not yet to be totally converted to Pogba myself as the world's next great player, and I'd really like to see how he plays against Touré. He's a very underrated passer. He's a powerful player, but he's an all-round midfielder, and I think Pogba's some way, you know, could probably learn something from him.
Well, he's a lot younger, so that's fair. Yeah.
He's had a bad start season, Pogba. I don't think you'll see him at his best on Wednesday, but, you know, who knows? Maybe he'll raise it for the occasion.
Is that because his head has been turned as well?
I don't think so. I think Pogba actually wasn't... I think if he wanted to leave this summer, he would have done. I think the reason he didn't leave this summer is more than anything, because he thought, well, if I stay here, I get another good season and a good team ahead of the European Championships. If I'm going to go anywhere, I can look at that next summer when I've not got that to worry about. I don't think he was thinking about leaving the summer at all. I think, if anything, it's more the pressure of him feeling like now he has to carry the team because the rest of the midfield is gone and he's been heralded as you know, the next best thing to sliced bread. I think the pressure of trying to do it all, anointing himself as the number 10 shirt, which is not an honour that he wanted to take on, but nevertheless, I think these things maybe have affected the way he thinks about the game and what he thinks he has to do in a game. And he might be trying a little bit too hard as well.
Mm. All right. Well, Arsenal are also involved in the Champions League. They're fresh from a mighty home win against Stoke. Two actual goals scored at home.
Yes, and the most un-Arsenal goal of all time. Coughlin put in a crunching tackle in his own half. There was a long ball sent up over the top. And Theo Walcott, with a delightful touch, tucked it away.
Long ball over the top.
A little uncharitable.
What a pass that was. Like, but yeah, I agree. It was very direct.
But Mesut Ozil was a genius pass.
Yeah. It was that.
But you say of all time, you know, there was a time when that kind of thing.
It was like Ian Wright. It did remind me of Ian Wright.
Yeah.
But I think it reminded Ian Wright of Ian Wright on Match of the Day.
Walcott, then, that's three goals in two games. So, wow, are you a real centre-forward then?
Well, 11 goals in 11 Premier League starts for Walcott. Really? But didn't convince me again. I think, so many chances that weren't making out of the game. And I'm sure you can make the case, I think especially against teams like Stoke, that maybe that pace is what gets you those chances. But his finishing is not good. And I think even the goal, where I've heard some people saying, oh, it was a great finish, I think it was much like two or three other shots he had in the game where he sort of jabbed it with not that much power close to the keeper, and all the rest of them he wound up looking like he just jabbed it with not much power into the keeper, and this one happened to go through his legs. So yeah. I don't know, I'm not sold on him as a striker still, but the goal scoring record is there, so maybe I'm
this
wrong.
This has been his problem for a while though. He doesn't seem to work on it in training at all. It's been a long time he's been a poor finisher.
Don't you think, I mean, if you could somehow get Giroud and Walker into a teleport device accidentally, and they could
the way
be
that the fly crypt
molded into one player, you would actually have a centre forward. There's a lot of this around. It's like Daley Blind and Chris Smalling. You know, they're like a Jack Spratt and Mrs. Spratt.
Yeah, it's an interesting
one can pass, one can finish, one can run. You need to meld them.
The difference with me is that Giroud has lots
Let's
of
do that with the
things
pundits
missing
as well.
Giroud has lots of things missing from his game, but he is a centre forward. That is, he's born to do that and nothing else on a football pitch. He needs lots of things in his game to make him a better centre forward, but that's what he is. Walcott, I'm just not sure, is a centre forward.
Right.
I've just got this weird image in my head of a Walcott Giroud hybrid vomiting on his food and breaking people's arms in arm wrestling fights.
Yeah.
But yeah, one thing we should say actually, that Jack Butland was really good in goal for Stoke.
Even though he let that weak trickling,
yeah, but I mean,
Walcott
he made some tremendous saves,
right?
And it's like it's. I think it's a good thing for him that he's actually a starting Premier League goalkeeper for the first time in his career. He was one of only four English or England qualified goalkeepers who started in the 18 team Premier League teams.
Okay,
on Saturday or this weekend, I should say.
Oh, interesting. You should also say well done to Arsenal for three straight clean sheets. Now they will be taking that impressive defensive record to Dinamo Zagreb, out of Croatia. Oh, they have gone 36 games unbeaten between Croatian League and European fixtures. They know what they're doing. They won 4-0 this weekend, Ian.
That looks like a tough game.
This
is a tricky group for Arsenal, actually, because Olympiacos are really decent at home. I think they won all three of their Champions League games at home last season.
Entirely without help as well.
And they beat Juventus in one of them, I'm almost sure. And obviously Zagreb unbeaten. And Munich.
And then you've got a little team called Munich.
I'd be a little bit worried for Arsenal.
A little bit worried. You think they could get pipped to second?
Yeah, possibly. Yeah.
All right, they need this. They need to get off to a good start, don't they? In Zagreb. Bayern looking scary, although they didn't have the most impressive game at the weekend against Augsburg.
A very dodgy penalty at
very
the end
dodgy.
To get a win.
But Douglas Costa, although he did kind of tumble over in a City fashion for that penalty, has been a brilliant signing, arguably the standout signing of the summer.
Muller has been superb too.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
He's got, I think, 9 in 9, and it was his birthday yesterday. He was 26.
He's 26
9 in 9 for a German,
says
producer Ben. He's excited by that. 9 means 9, by the way. And Vidal come in, and he seems to be concentrating on his football for Bayern, which is something that's perhaps eluding him in his forays with the Chilean national side.
Well, yeah, him and Douglas, they're good signings for that team. Mm. I was actually speaking to Jerome Boateng the other day.
Oh, yeah.
I just dropped that in. Mm-hmm. Well, we did a Guardian interview with him, and it was quite interesting. But we've held it. He talked a bit about Arsenal.
Oh yeah.
So
are you allowed to say what it is? It embargoed?
No, it's embargoed. But it will be quite interesting with the Arsenal game coming up. But
what does he say?
Well, he talked about Vidal particularly, saying we needed that. We needed, you know, he said in training he's a bit of an animal to play against. You know, he keeps everybody right on the edge because he is very physical. And he said, yeah, that team the season before needed that edge, and he's sort of brought it in.
And what did he say about Arsenal?
He said some very nice things about Jack Wilshere, actually.
Did he?
Yeah. And also Mesut Ozil, who is his best mate.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. He said some really nice things, saying he's a brilliant player, his potential is so high, he can be one of the best. And then right at the end, he slightly ruined it by saying, if he played with some really good players, then you'd... which I'm sure he didn't mean it, it sort of came out like that. But I'm trailing this interview. you can read this in The Guardian in the days to come.
Brilliant. I'll look forward to that. Also coming up in the days to come, Malmo taking on PSG. Ooh, Zlatan back at his former club. Did you know that Zlatan has scored... He's Zlatan, I think the verb is. 43 Champions League goals. That's four more than anybody else, including Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo. Can that be right? Apparently it is.
I might have got this wrong, but I think Marcus Rosenberg...
Marcus
Rosenberg, yeah. That used to play for West Brom. Mm-hmm. He hit the crossbar with two overhead kicks at the weekend.
Absolutely. What a misfortune for Rosenberg. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, what were the odds?
Two I know. Beautiful yeah, two really kicks. Good overhead kicks. They were great.
Malmo, of course, beat Celtic to get to the group stage. That's going to be an interesting game. Real Madrid, talking about people who score a lot of goals, they have Cristiano Ronaldo, who did five this weekend against Espanyol, and I think he set up the other one. He's now Real Madrid's all-time record goal scorer in the Liga. As you know, he's got 230 in 203 games, and they're hosting Shakhtar Donetsk. In Group C, it's Benfica against Astana out of Kazakhstan. Galatasaray will be taking on Atletico Madrid. And Roma play Barcelona. Yikes. Yikes. Although, Roma have never been beaten by Barcelona in the Champions League.
I'm fascinated by the game because obviously Roma took an absolute shellacking in the one big home game they had in the Champions League last year, and we think they
Bayern Munich 7-1.
Munich 7-1, and you know, you like to hope they've learned some lessons. They've had a decent start to the Serie A season, in as much as they're on 7 points. They haven't played brilliantly, except in the Juventus game, is probably their best performance. But yeah, it'll be very interesting to see how they approach the game this year, having had that experience last year.
Well, Roma, pre that game, were a delight to watch, but the kind of football they played was almost an invitation to a strong side like Bayern to completely destroy them.
Yeah.
And once it had started to go wrong, there was no real plan B. I think perhaps this year's side is better assorted, it's better equipped to deal with adversity. And play a slightly more practical form of football, although they haven't been playing particularly well so far. They did get absolutely smashed by Barcelona pre-season in the Gamper Trophy, but yeah. That's
when
pre-season.
Did they last play in the Champions League?
Roma?
Roma against Barcelona.
Oh, I see. Was 2002.
Right. Well, there's been a few changes since then.
Although...
there's this fella. I don't know if you've ever seen him. He's kind of small, runs around a lot, scores a lot of goals.
Totti still
Nathan
there.
Dyer.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. All right. Well, fair enough. I mean, obviously, Barcelona are massive favourites, and that. And of course, we're going to have all the goals with me from 6:30 on. I mean, no, I shouldn't, but just to say, if you are near a BT Sport channel at 6:30 on Tuesday and Wednesday, I'll be all over all the goals and talking points as they happen with the goal show.
I was watching you on BT Sport last night, and turned the computer to show to my girlfriend and said, oh, that's Jimbo who I do the podcast
oh, right, okay.
with. And she goes, wow, he looks much younger on TV. When I saw him on the Guardian profile pic, I thought he was closer to 60.
Well, there you go.
60?
Yeah.
Yeah, she certainly should. Well, the Europa League, which is also all over BT Sport, of course. So you've got Spurs taking on Karabag. That'll be a treat, White Hart Lane. And Celtic travelling to Ajax. Celtic... who by the time this game is played may be 5 points behind the SPL leaders Aberdeen. Now, Aberdeen have won six straight matches, the first six games of the season, Ian.
Yeah.
What was who's the latest victory against?
It came against Celtic.
No.
Yes, very much so. It was quite a lively game. There was two penalties, a red card, a comeback from Aberdeen, and a ball cleared off the line in the last few moments of the match.
All right.
Very
Gav Box, among the many people urging us to discuss this, Aberdeen has never won its opening six games, not even under Sir Alex Ferguson.
They were greatly helped by Celtic defending, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Boyata was gave away a stupid penalty, and then for the second goal, which was scored by Quinn, it was just a set piece, and the Celtic defence let him just waltz through and kind of poke a toe on the end of it.
Right, Celtic. So. I mean, I saw them recently in the games with Malmo, and they were arguably unlucky with the goal, their goal that was disallowed, but I saw astonishingly bad defending. Really?
Well, that was definitely confirmed by the jaunt.
One wonders what will happen when they visit Amsterdam and the Amsterdam Arena, indeed. Hmm. Anyway, so you were watching on Sunday night, BT, so you saw the Milan derby.
I saw the second half of the Milan derby.
All right, okay.
And the introduction of Mario Balotelli.
Yeah, Jose says, oh, this is Mr. Jose Reyes, says, who was that energetic ball-chasing striker that Milan brought on yesterday? It was Mario Balotelli, Paolo.
Yeah, finally Mario. Yeah, I mean, we talked about it a bit earlier, didn't we? But yes, he had a really interesting game. You know, he came off the bench right after Milan had gone a goal down, and he was just everything that he is when he's good, which is direct and physical and aggressive. You know, there was a point where he basically just, I was going to say, rode two challenges in the air. He didn't even ride them. He just smashed straight through them. He just went through two sliding challenges and then put a cross in that I can't remember who, someone deflected behind for a corner. You know, he had a absolutely thunderous driver hit the post. He had a free kick from 30 yards out that forced a very good save out of Handanovic. You know, he is a very dangerous player when he's like this. You know, it would be good for Milan and frankly good for Italy if he can sustain it. But
he also kept his head, because it looked rather like nominative non-determinism's Felipe Melo had been specifically sent out with instructions to get into him.
The problem is, though, it was almost like he was against Mancini, he was against Inter. It was like he was playing with a real point to prove to people. Can he do that for the rest of this season? That would be the
well.
Worry.
He's got a lot of people to prove a point to, which is the good news.
Yeah,
in
he
his
won't
case.
Run out. I mean, he proved a few points to Brendan Rodgers.
Yeah. Yeah,
Inter looked very good though, didn't they? I thought that central midfield. I mean, I really like Felipe Melo. He's one of my favourite players.
Really,
him and Kondogbia is a kind of
Kondogbia
tough midfield.
Is there a slower player with the ball? He looks like. Have you ever seen that? The great little clip, Japanese binocular football. Have you ever seen this? He looks like one of those players. Basically, they have binoculars strapped to their eyes, which plays havoc with their fields, their depth of vision, as you might expect. And they kind of stumble around, groping for the ball. And that is him with the ball at his feet, Kondogbia. So you got him, and then you got alongside him Felipe Melo, and then alongside him Guarin. It is a particularly ugly midfield, but you like that, Barney.
Well, I mean, it's certainly a strong midfield.
Mm.
It is physically strong, like, and that's something that you know, I think is going to do them some favours in games. Kondogbia kind of got himself in a horrible pickle right before the goal. He was sort of trapped with his facing his own goal and playing a horrible pass to Handanovic, and it actually took I think it was Gary Medel who had a little pass to sort of free the situation up, and then next thing you knew it was a wonderful goal by Guarin. But I mean, Guarin is right at the top of the list of frustrating players for me, because he can't half strike the ball. I mean, he really can finish, but his passing is terrible.
He's like Olivier Giroud played in midfield.
Yes, that's probably true, yeah.
Oh, actually, that's not fair, because he can pass the ball, supposedly. Diego Costa played in midfield then.
Yeah.
Favourite Felipe Melo fact.
Ah.
His eldest son is called Lineker, in homage to Gary Lineker.
That's a great fact.
Yeah.
What were the other ones that beat to be your favourite?
His name being Felipe Melo.
Okay.
Number two fact.
Yeah. All right. Right, let's take a little break while we all take that in, and then we'll be on to some more from the Premier League. Hey there, listeners. It's into part three we go with a special bit of pod love for Leicester. Sorry if we're late to this one. Were we those wrong-headed types who were saying that they might struggle this year with nice Claudio Ranieri as their manager? If we were, how wrong we were, because they're in second place in the Premier League after a mighty five rounds of the season.
And looking very good.
They're for real, aren't they, Ian?
They are, yeah. Although not for real in the first half, when they were far too ponderous, too slow, not enough speed in the game, in their game.
Right.
I mean, but when they came out in the second half with Dyer, when Dyer went out on the wing and Mahrez moved inside, they were a lot more dangerous.
Right. They were 2-0 down with 20 minutes to go, and they won 3-2. It's interesting, you make the point about the change in the game. A Bankhead says, could the pod discuss Tim Sherwood's substitutions?
The key thing was that he moved Dyer.
Right.
He moved Dyer out wide and then moved Mahrez inside, brought a Shoah on up front who could, you know, bully around the defence.
Right.
That's basically it.
Right. Mahrez, what a frustrating player. I keep not putting him in my fantasy team because I'm sure the bubble's going to burst, and he keeps doing performances like this one. Yeah, that great, that there's some amazing scenes from that, from
yeah,
that game.
Yeah, he was sensational, especially for the Vardy goal, where he dragged it back and beat a couple of players and then set up Drinkwater, who put that ball across the box for him.
He sat three opposition players down with one touch in the game.
And he continues to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's great.
He's for real as well. What about Nathan Dyer? I hope he's okay. Oh, look, it's Eva Laundrie again saying that on US TV, Peter Drury and Andy Tanzer were laughing about how wobbly Dyer was when he came back on, and he didn't remember having scored the winning goal.
That's true. They were saying that, but in the post-match interview, he said he was fine.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So was he concussed or not?
No.
So he got absolutely creamed by
it. He said he wasn't concussed.
Right. But then he wouldn't know, would he?
That's a good point.
But it is. This takes us back to that issue over players getting injuries to the head or knocks to the head, and there not being any kind of mechanism or even expectation that they might be taken out of action.
It's not for a player to evaluate whether or not they're concussed. That's why you have professionals.
I don't think I'm not concussed is a convincing sort of argument, is it?
No. What about, here's Jason Roberts tweeting, seriously, did I miss the memo when keepers got the go-ahead to commit GBH on the pitch, but if you dare jump with them, free kick? So surprisingly bitter, Jason Roberts.
Was there a memo about that? I don't.
Well, we didn't get it either.
The memos
not for the first time, we're out of the loop.
Well, Jason Roberts is out of the loop. He must be getting other memos about stuff, but not that one, the memo about offside.
Okay. Does he have a point, though?
Well, he did get sort of Harold Schumacher'd, did Dyer. But you could make the case that Liverpool's goal, Benteke's overhead kick, could have been disallowed for dangerous play, given that you see Herrera's coming towards the ball and he sort of shies away, bottles it, if you like, but he's only bottling it because otherwise he's going to get pinged in the head by a boot.
Guzan shouldn't have even been coming for that in the first place. There was two defenders there. I think Dyer's only 5'5". There's no way he should have been coming anywhere near that.
Imagine if Benteke's goal had been disallowed.
I know, it would be a bit
well, that happened a couple of weeks ago, didn't it?
Yeah, but I mean,
who did that happen to? Was it?
It's all that kicking something is danger. Running is dangerous.
Was it Southampton? Was it Cameron Jerome?
It was
Cameron Jerome. Yeah. And that awful ref disallowed his goal, poor chap. And he hasn't scored forever.
But Benteke wasn't really anywhere near anyone. I mean, if
Herrera had carried through with the challenge. He does shy away.
He may have successfully prevented a goal.
I can't believe you're making that case.
No, I don't. I say the case can be made. I'm not necessarily arguing it myself.
All right. Anyway, Leicester, eh? How long can this go on for?
A few more weeks, maybe.
Really?
Yeah. I mean,
they've still been conceding a few goals. And,
that's true.
You know,
going 2-0 down at home to Villa is not a great sign.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to watch, and good luck to them.
Mm.
Well, they're Stoke away next, so decent chance there of getting it on at least one more. Next two games are at home, West Ham and Arsenal, a little bit trickier, but, you know, both home games, so who knows?
Yeah. Now, in other Premier League news, as we head towards the end of today's Football Weekly, you've got Watford beating Swansea 1-0, Odion Ighalo. That was a bit of an upset in terms of the team's form coming into the game. But I bet Simon Burnton was pleased, unless he perhaps didn't go to the game because of their rubbish home form that he was complaining about in Thursday's pod. West Brom had a 0-0 draw with Southampton. Sunderland lost at home to Spurs, although that was a narrow... It was a close thing, wasn't it? 1-0.
Yeah, and Spurs needed that. I mean, there's a lot of talk afterwards about Harry Kane again. Mm. That seems to be the current thing. I think Harry Kane will be fine. I agree with the manager. He's a really good player, good finisher. I mean, there is an argument he started scoring for England because playing for England against those teams is reminiscent to going out on loan to Lincoln City or whatever, so he's sort of back in the comfort zone that made him. But I think we're fine, and I suppose we'll do some improving, I think, with a bit of patience.
Right, okay. And what about Norwich and their 3-1 win over Bournemouth in the derby of the teams with unfeasibly young managers? Alex Neil with a victory there.
He's an interesting fellow, isn't he, Alex Neil? He's kind of quite outspoken, and
is he?
Yeah, I kind of like him. He's ballsy. Doesn't give a damn.
All right.
And no, he's quite charismatic, I think.
I think so too. Way. With his shiny head.
He's got Wes Hoolahan playing very well.
He hasn't he though?
Yeah,
and he is in my team.
With a superb goal and a assist with a shin pad in hand as well.
Yeah, that was interesting.
It was good, wasn't it?
I like the commentator suggesting that he should actually be penalised for that.
Did he?
Yeah, the regulation is that the shin pad's very much for use on your foot and nowhere on your ankle and nowhere else. Well, your shin, actually. But he instead carried it in his hand.
I'd never seen that before.
Like a large smartphone or something.
What do you think his thinking was about carrying it?
I think he was too busy playing football to strap it back onto his shin.
Yeah, he was worried he'd lose it or something. Or if he put it down, someone would...
You might.
Yeah,
because you could enter into a really murky area at a certain point if you were holding a shin pad and you made contact with the ball.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's not a handball, is it?
I think the most controversial element of that game, though, wasn't so much his shin pad as the entire Bournemouth kit. I don't know if you saw that with a fuchsia. Yeah, a producer Ben telling us they're sponsoring a breast cancer awareness campaign. And it certainly is an eye-catching way to give that worthy cause some publicity. You've got some away kit news, though, I think, to finish off, haven't you, Ian?
Cardiff City, I have a new away kit, a black and yellow striped number, which they're selling for, and correct me if I'm wrong, John, I think it's £600.
What?
£699.
£699, and you can only buy it if you sponsor a player and you get it at the end of the season.
So you can get this kit at the end of the season?
It's not available to buy for your Joe Average fan.
Is it just a shirt? Do you get shorts? Socks?
Oh, I don't know. I think you might just get the shirt.
You'd hope you get the full strip for that. So they're going to be using this. Is this their third strip or something?
They might use it if there's a clash.
But you can't buy it in the shops.
Can't buy it.
Unless you sponsor a player. And then you can pick it up at the end of the season.
And then you get it at the end of the season.
Can lots of people sponsor that player? Right? Is there any one of these kits?
No, I think it's just one.
Wow.
As far as I know.
Limited edition Cardiff third strip.
Yeah. I could be wrong.
I love football the way it's going. Magnificent. Well, that's it then for today's Football Weekly. Is there anything else that anyone would like to throw in at this point? John, how are you on beer?
Yeah, I think 333. Actually, I went into a pub on Saturday in London's leafy Crouch End, and when I went to the bar, the barman was a Football Weekly listener.
Oh, a big shout out to him.
Poured me my 333rd beer, which was
right good.
How did he recognise you from the voice?
My distinctive... deep.
Do you know what? The only person I've ever known recognise any Guardian journalists are people who listen to the pod.
Right.
I remember being in Klagenfurt with Kevin McCarra and some German guy giving out the tickets saying, "You are Kevin McCarra from Football Weekly."
It's true.
Astonishing that Football Weekly listeners.
Yeah. They're all over the place, even in Australia. Isn't that right, Will Hasty? Yes. Ian, anything else you want to add?
No.
Paolo?
No.
Only that coming up, I'm not sure if it'll be out today or tomorrow, is a little video of me and Jonathan Wilson previewing the Champions League games, specifically the two Manchester clubs Champions League games, actually. But so look out for that on the football site the next
day. On the football site, I'll look out for that. I need to do some research, so super. Great, okay. Barney, anything else you want to add?
No, I'm completely done.
Great, okay. So let me just say Happy Jewish New Year, by the way, if that's your thing. 5776. How time flies. Anyway, let's hope you have a great week until Thursday when we'll be back. And then, you know, a great week afterwards as well. But you stop by and hear Football Weekly Extra when we react to the Champions League midweek fun and look forward to the weekend and all that. For now, ever so many thanks for you for joining us. And we'll be back Thursday.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that gives you the power of beautiful design. So you can do more than create a website, you can set yourself apart. To start your free trial, visit squarespace.com/guardian.